Hello, everyone. Welcome to another episode by the Kenyan Wall Street Podcast. Today, I have an interesting guest. Her name is Elsie Mbugua. So Elsie is the founder and managing director of Leadwood Energy. So she's here to talk about the energy space, most specifically, you know, her role in that space, and basically helping us understand the different movers and shakers of the energy industry. So welcome again to the podcast, Elsie.
Thank you, Eric, for having me.
Yeah, so maybe let's get started by, you know, just looking at your background in the energy industry. So you worked at Goldman Sachs, you know, as an energy trader before moving on to JP Morgan, you know, and then a couple of years in the UK as well. So maybe just help us understand how you got into the energy trading business or industry.
All right. No, fantastic. So we'll start by saying perhaps, you know, one of the few women in the industry, but I have about 15 years of experience in the energy sector. And so, as you rightly said, I started as a physical energy trader on the Goldman Sachs J. Aron commodity business. Mm-hmm. At the time, what they were doing is that they were hedging airlines for the first time. And because it was around the financial crisis, it was the first time that banks got involved in buying outright crude on behalf of the refineries. So the banks would make money off of the financial arrangements that they had, so LIBOR plus whatever spread, and then they would also be paid back off of the hydrocarbons. And so that's how, you know, what we quintessentially think as Wall Street banks, that's how many of them became physical energy traders and had that exposure. I then moved on to JP Morgan, again, as a physical energy trader. And this time I was in, I started on the coal and emissions desk. At the time, most of the electricity utilities in the US were run by, were run on coal. Yeah. And then quickly from there, we had acquired quite a number of assets, power assets. So I traded about 3,000 megawatts of natural gas fired power plants. And just to give you context, you know, we're probably at that 2,000, you know, sort of 600 mark in the country at the moment. So what I'm saying is that I'm trading more than what we, the capacity that we have in Kenya at that time. And wow, most of those assets were in California. Mm-hmm. And then because of a good understanding of the natural gas markets, I started trading pipeline natural gas. What that means is that we go to the gas producers and then buy directly from the wellhead, enter into long-term pipeline arrangements, and then sell on to utilities, mainly out in the East Coast. And yeah, so what we're making is the spread, right, between where we've purchased and where we're selling. Mm-hmm. And then I had a little bit more of an international background. Kenya is home. And so I was looking for that international experience and was asked to be one, in fact, the only North America trader for to build out JP Morgan's LNG business. Mm-hmm. So I managed one of the biggest LNG facilities through a marketing agreement that JP Morgan had with a facility called Cheniere out in Louisiana. And then with that, stayed on for a couple of years and then realized that I wanted to move back to Africa and thought that it might be a good idea to first move to the EMEA desk within JP Morgan still. Mm-hmm. And I was moved to trade Dated Brent. So I was one of two physical crude oil traders for JP Morgan, meaning that you're trading a lot of the North Sea grades. And some of the light sweets, the Bonnies and Quas out of West Africa. And so that kind of gives you a good sense of sort of prior to my entrepreneurial life. And then about 4.5 years ago, I left JP Morgan and moved back. And I recognized that the opportunity that we were just at the beginning of our energy journey and that it would be exciting to be, you know, part of building something on the continent. And so that's how we're here today.
That's really quite the story. And, you know, you talk about just your years in the US and then later in London. So how has the shift of the energy industry been, you know, during your time, as you said, when you started 15 years ago and where we are at the moment?
So I think what I would say is that our energy markets on the continent, we are still at a very nascent stage. So, you know, the way I see it here is that we're currently laying the frameworks, we're establishing the policy to drive the strategic energy efforts across the continent. So I think having been a trader in mature markets, it's almost like having a crystal ball to see what our markets will look like 10 to 15 years from now. Yeah. And if you can see where we are, just in terms of just some metrics, you know, on the continent, we still have about 600 million people without electricity. Uh-huh. On our consumption of imported refined products, let me just say Kenya in particular, one, we are price takers on the international, fuel market. Mm-hmm. And someone rightly said that Kenya's consumption is actually the evaporation fuel at one of ExxonMobil's refineries, right? So just to give you context.
Yeah.
And I think given that I am from Kenya, I think what we are seeing at the moment is that Kenya is one of the more developed nations on the continent. So, you know, in short, we still have a long way to go to industrialize our economies. But I think that's a fantastic thing for many of us and why we're all back, because it just means there's boundless opportunities as well.
Yeah, yeah. And you've just mentioned that actually the industry on the continent is quite nascent. And I know then, coming back, you started LC Investments and also by extension, you know, Leadwood Energy, which then focuses on power. So maybe you can just tell us more about LC Investments and Leadwood Energy as well.
Okay, so I think for the conversation, so LC Investments is a holding company, but the vehicle that does most of our energy transactions is Leadwood Energy. Uh-huh. So just for purposes of this, I'll focus on Leadwood Energy. Yeah. So I'm the founder and the managing director of Leadwood Energy, which is a specialized energy advisory firm that supports both governments and private sector on major infrastructure developments on the continent, and particularly renewable energy. The firm was created in 2017. We are headquartered in Nairobi, Kenya. We established the firm with the intent of unlocking a lot of the possibilities that we saw in Africa's energy growth story. And since then, we've been dedicating on finding solutions to complex energy issues. So now that's both within the oil and gas sector and then the renewable energy sector. So what I would say is that we are across the spectrum.
Yeah.
And as a firm, I think we've been guided by that understanding that energy touches every aspect of human life, and that's why it is so exciting. So service and value creation have always been a core part of our business. Uh-huh. And has also ensured that we remain very customer focused.
Yeah.
The way the firm is set up is that we've got a strong technical capacity, and then coupled with our financial expertise, what we find is that often we are the bridge between the technical developers on major infrastructure projects in this region and also the investors as well. So in some cases, we'll lead on the technical side of the project and provide that support to our clients. And other times we are on the financial side. So I think that blend of expertise, both technical and financial, has been a key differentiator that has allowed us to really thrive in this environment. I should also mention that the company has received numerous awards. And in 2020, we were voted best renewable energy consulting firm in East Africa. And mm-hmm. we also received the East African Green Future Leadership Award in November.
That's really awesome. And so you said the Leadwood Energy was founded in 2017, if I'm not wrong, but you've already worked on a number of projects, and one of them includes, you know, your advisory to the State Department of Petroleum Kenya with regards to the tallow oil project. So maybe you could just touch a little bit on what specifically, you know, you your firm was working on with the State Department in this project.
Yeah, so I acted as a financial transaction advisor to the government of Kenya on the country's crude oil prospects. Yeah. But it was part of a larger consortium with two other leading firms, multinationals. I also happen to be the only, sort of Kenyan on the financial transaction advisory team. Uh-huh. So our participation included negotiating the heads of terms that were signed by the president in June of 2019, and also the export of the 200,000 barrels that were done jointly with the oil contractor. Mm-hmm. So we were quite amassed, and also kind of thinking about the framework of how we would finance the pipeline as well from Lockheed Chau to Lamu.
Just go on.
So some of the other transactions that we've worked on, I think, you know, it might be important to sort of lay it out, is that often, you know, we usually note internally that our main focus is on first of a kind transactions. I think we thought that given the expertise that we have, and particularly the global expertise that we have, then we could carve out a niche for ourselves to focus on some of the harder, more difficult and challenging projects in the region. So some of the things that we've been doing that you might have seen is that we were restructuring National Oil Company of Kenya. We were brought on board by the lenders just to provide the financial analysis and help them understand just how big was the hole that we looked at. Mm-hmm. And a lot of what we provided was guidance in terms of various things that the government could potentially explore to just get the, you know, National Oil Company back to financial health. We've been involved in acquisitions of thermal power plants by various infrastructure funds, some of them public, some of them not public. And we also provide the technical expertise on gas conversion of those plants. And we've supported that also by linking LNG traders who we have close relationships with to the investment committees of a lot of these infrastructure funds to provide them the comfort in making some of these critical investments in our country. Something else that we've been involved in is just policy directive on the privatization of transmission lines. And currently we're working with various development finance institutions on how we can de-risk transmission investment. And I can lay that out a little bit more as we have a conversation. We focus also on supporting institutional investors on environmental, social, and corporate governance, so ESG, which is sort of now the new buzzword that we keep hearing around. And what we keep saying is that, you know, it's no longer a nice to have metric on our financial reports. You know, now it is something that investors and shareholders are demanding. And, you know, we see with BlackRock and, you know, and Temasek, there's been just a lot of noise about trillions of dollars that are available. And what we're doing is just sounding out that it's important that our African companies really start thinking through sustainability and ESG reporting as a core focus. And so we are supporting that and ultimately becoming a bridge between those that have the money and those that could benefit from some of that capital. And then previously we had worked with, you know, Dalberg. So Leadwood Energy with Dalberg Advisors completed and presented a study on the feasibility of a local currency denominated power purchase agreement. You would know that if that went through, that would be the first one. Again, it's coming back home, recognizing that, you know, this is patient, you know, and a lot of these transactions are almost like annuities. So why should we be spending? You know, we have a lot of fund managers who are looking for yield. A lot of these projects, as long as you have a healthy utility, are de-risked. So we thought, why not think about how us as Africans can also benefit from these long-term infrastructure investments that we have on the continent? And then just finally, it might be worth noting that I think often, you know, our technical expertise to help communities, you know, we also use it to help communities with their infrastructure bottlenecks. And we do this through our foundation at Kenya. So in December, for example, you know, at Kenya completed a borehole to support more than 3,000 vendors at Uhuru Market in Nairobi to get access to clean water. So we'll arrange the financing for it, and we'll also do the technical and complete the drilling ourselves. So we do use our private sector skills to also support communities that could benefit.
Yeah, and I think also the energy infrastructure, you know, is one of the most capital intensive, obviously, areas. And you really need to, you know, to get the right partners. And sometimes it's to the tune of billions of dollars. So it's really important to have, you know, companies like yourself who have that expertise to then bring all those partners on board and execute the project.
Yeah, that's correct. That's correct.
Yeah, then so maybe if we just look a little more on the oil and gas space, and I would just want us to focus mostly on Africa. So there's obviously supply chains have been severely affected by the pandemic. From where you sit, have we started seeing some sort of recovery in terms of supply of mostly oil and gas across the continent or even globally?
Yeah, so, you know, very, very interesting question. Again, I think what you recognize on the eastern side of the country, I mean, we are price takers because we're still in the development phases of, you know, our oil and gas spaces. So take Kenya, for an example. We might have discovered oil, but right now we've not reached a place and we're still in the exploration phase and are not there in terms of production. Mozambique might be a step ahead. I think Tanzania has a little bit more of a unique in the fact that they have gas. But they're also exploring for oil and other things as well. I think West Africa is a little bit different in the sense that they have been a key player in terms of exporting, right? So they got to production a lot earlier. But I think the key thing is looking back where we've come from and where we are right now. So in 2020, and just around the beginning of COVID, you know, you essentially had almost a full-on demand destruction, right? And at a time where it was coupled with, you know, just prices falling to the core. What we've seen is that, you know, as economies are starting to recover, we're getting more people vaccinated, people are starting to move a little bit more, you know, that there's been an increase, that price uptick, you know, has been consistent all the way through. So this is now more on a pricing standpoint. I think that is where many of us on the continent have felt that increase, and perhaps even in Kenya and Uganda, just a real outcry at, you know, having to pay really high fuel prices at a time when, you know, their people's businesses and the economy has been massively impacted by COVID. I think from an infrastructure standpoint, things are still slow. And a big part of that is the issues around capital flight. So you'll recognize that a lot of major, you know, institutional money right now, with issues around climate change, are just not willing to put money into what was the traditional fossil fuel. So that has been a major departure. And that is the consequence of that, or the result of that, will massively impact the sector. So things like, you know, including Tanzania and what they plan on doing. I think the traditional sources of money that we had for the oil and gas space, that has dried up. And that is a source of concern for many within the sector. And all of that is moving to cleaner fuels. And the renewable energy sector has been the main beneficiary of that.
Yeah. And before we go then to the renewable energy, I know we've mentioned a lot about Tanzania and Uganda, and there's been recent development, you know, with just the government signing up agreements for the oil pipeline between Uganda and Tanzania, and also closer home, the gas pipeline between Kenya and Tanzania. What can we expect from, you know, these infrastructure development?
So I think first, the announcements might have been made. So for example, specifically speaking on gas, that's an MOU, right? So between, by the time you move from memorandum of understanding to where the transaction is completely done, there's a lot of work that needs to get done. So I think one, it's managing the expectations of how quickly that could potentially come on and recognizing that that is that's years as well, right? Yeah. I think on the Tanzanian side, I think one thing to watch out for is commitments of financing. So mm-hmm. back to what I was saying in terms of capital flight, I think we'll know it's a real go because we might have the passion and the willingness to see a lot of these infrastructure transactions done. But Tanzania as well is coming from a place where perhaps policies had not previously been in favor of investors. Yeah. And unfortunately, it's usually very difficult to change that tide when there's already some potentially bad blood in certain situations. So I think I think the key thing on a lot of these transactions is, to watch out for commitments from, potential investors to finance it. I think we also need to get to a place where FID is done. Uh-huh. And so those will be the critical, sort of signals that the market is looking for us to know that it's a real go. I think signing agreements and perhaps, breaking ground are two different things. And the fact that these long-term infrastructure plays take time, so we do have to be patient.
Yeah, of course, we really have to be patient to see the project come to fruition and to get some maybe nice output from it. And then you mentioned also on the issue of price, and obviously there's been some increase in demand, especially with the reopening of the US, some states, and Europe as well. And obviously, then we've seen oil register some gains on price, which has really affected the Kenyans, especially in terms of price. I've seen today Super Petrol is up again, I think 3 shillings per liter. Do we expect to see these gains continue over the next few months?
Yeah, no, so Eric, I mean, if I had the crystal ball on knowing where crude prices were going, I would certainly not be working again. But I think part of it is, the increase in price has been based on the perception of a recovery, right? Mm-hmm. And, that perceived recovery, I think prices will sustain. I think right now we're trading within a bandwidth. And if you look at historically, this is generally where prices sort of seem to stagnate. Mm-hmm. The prices had tried to push through that $70 mark, and that has not happened. So what we're saying is that there's some stability. I think the pain was that we were talking about, $30 prices of Murban crude at some point earlier last year. Mm-hmm. And then now we're talking about 60. So that has been an upward, an upward trajectory that is expected. Yeah. But I think much of the pain in terms of that continued increase, I think in many ways will sort of halt here for a little bit. Not to say that obviously we'd all prefer to have cheaper prices, but the only thing that could drastically affect this again is having a situation of some demand destruction again, which I don't foresee. So as long as we're getting vaccinated, with the COVID variants, perhaps it might linger a little bit where we're not really fully back in terms of demand, throughout the world. But I think on the continent as well, we're starting to see quite a bit of recovery as well. So I would say what we should expect is sustained prices where we are, given that we're price takers of crude products.
Okay, that's interesting. And then, so you've mentioned the way more funding is moving away from fossil fuels into the renewable energy space. So maybe we could just take a few minutes, to look at that space, given that Kenya is actually one of at the forefront of renewable energy production, generation across the continent. What has really driven that shift? And I know even Lidl Energy focuses more on renewable energy. So maybe you can just share a few comments on that space.
Yeah. No, absolutely. Thanks, Eric. So I think on the renewable energy side, so first, East Africa has been a major destination for international investment in the renewable energy space. I think when you look at historically, our power purchase agreements in Kenya are US dollar denominated, and majority of our IPP's independent power producers are currently owned by foreign owned companies and have been financed either in euros or US dollars, right? So it's bright that you can park your money here in this particular sector without necessarily having, you know, sort of major currency risk, right? Like other countries. I think the region as well and its leaders also understand the value of bringing on sustainable and cheaper sources of energy from renewable energy. So now I would say specifically in Kenya, I mean, we've really gone out of our way to advocate for more renewable energy investments and show that we are part of, you know, the efforts of decarbonization and ultimately getting to a net zero world. And, you know, the other thing I think to think through with renewable energy and why we're also seeing this shift is I think we're also cognizant that Africa is one of the most vulnerable to issues around climate change. So therefore, our countries also want to be part of the solution, I would say. So specifically in Kenya, I think what we have seen throughout is that we've been fully committed to the shift in renewable energy. And that is even evident within our generation mix, right? So I think currently at the moment, Kenya is currently at, you know, between 70 and 80% renewable energy. A big part of that is hydro, that probably leads, that's roughly 30%. Geothermal, which is 28%. You know, we see solar at 2%, and then wind, obviously, with the Lake Turkana project has, you know, kind of picked up at 12%. And even with that, our state corporations, so for example, take a KenGen, so Kenya's electricity generating company. Unveiled an elaborate renewable energy expansion strategy. And they intend to grow our geothermal base in the region. You know, it's incredible to think that, you know, Kenya has a 10 gigawatt potential for geothermal. And at the moment, you know, we're even under 1,000 megawatts of that. So I think the country through KenGen as well, and it's good to give credit where it's due. We are supporting other African nations with their geothermal drilling efforts. So not only are we committed in the country, but I think what we're seeing is that we're also encouraging the region to do the same.
And it's really massive, the potential that you've mentioned of about 10 gigawatts when we have barely scratched the surface. It means that, you know, we could get to a point where we could actually export some of that energy as well as a country.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So maybe as we move towards the end of this discussion, what is some of the innovative innovations or innovative companies that, you know, excite you in the renewable energy space, both say at the country or continent level?
That's a good question. You know, so you'll put me, so some of my clients might not be happy with me if I tell you who they are.
You so can, let me, you can think, just speak, name the innovations.
Speak more broadly. So maybe speak more broadly. I think I have been excited by companies who understand that we cannot fix a lot of our energy issues without tackling some of the policy issues as well, right? And these are companies who have the capacity to advise our governments when it comes to attracting investments. I know we do that. Our firm is currently involved in various restructuring efforts, both on the policy side at the Ministry of Energy in Kenya, and also with our power utility. But I think some of the things that we should be seeing and that excite me is, you know, getting to a place where we encourage a harmonized voice from our various energy stakeholders, right? So the Ministry of Energy, the regulator, the utility, and this hasn't always been the case all the time. So we need to essentially send out the right market signals. I think, you know, enhancing some of companies that are also enhancing some of our operational capabilities and revenue collection, you know, the installation of smart meters, you know, thinking through how we can, you know, solve for a cost reflective tariff, right? Dealing with some of the issues around the high number of, you know, expression of interest that were there. Even as, you know, companies that you not might not necessarily think are at the cusp of innovation, like the tax laws. You know, currently there's been a lot of changes to, you know, taxation that sometimes is to the detriment of us promoting renewable energy. And then again, also collaborating with the various IPPs. Yeah. I think I've also been excited by companies, for example, who are, I want to say, maybe more pragmatic about the plight of where we are in terms of increasing renewable energy. Maybe this is at nations. Mm-hmm. Even more important than renewables being cheaper is a conversation around what is the right mix and optimal generation mix for the country. Yeah. And we find often that those decisions are made for us and not by us, right? Yeah. So, you know, we might be fortunate to have all this renewable energy, but we also rely heavily on hydro as a baseload.
Yes.
And with all the droughts that we've been seeing, you know, it hasn't been reliable. So I think companies who have the ability to advocate for cheaper fuel and the push for renewable energy, and, you know, to ensure that there's grid stability, and that means more baseload power. Mm-hmm. And these are companies who are not necessarily saying we're going to join the herd mentality, but are making the difficult decisions to say, no, we will encourage LNG to act as a bridge for renewable energy so that we can have, you know, we can optimize on more renewable energy. It is companies that are looking at opportunities around battery storage, right? Uh-huh. Gas conversion of our existing thermal power plants, because a lot of these power plants are quite old and they're quite critical, and they sit right at the cusp of many of our load centers. Where the population is exactly where they are. So we do have to think through that. Mm-hmm. And I recognize that those are difficult decisions to have. I think companies as well that have taken advantage of the mobile money payments as well. So, you know, companies who are, you know, sort of invested in the mini grid arena, you know, and, you know, so both mini grid arena and just thinking about innovating for the rural electrification. So the 600 million people that I was talking about, finding innovative ways of getting them electricity, right? You know, to light up our continent. And then lastly, I think the bulk of the other companies, and again, I say these specifically for the African continent, are people who are able to harness data, right? It is sort of the new gold that we have at the moment. And it is harnessing that data very often where it allows investors to be able to make critical decisions that would be in the best interest, I think, of both our countries and I think the continent at large.
Yeah, thank you very much for that. I think personally for me, I think also from a consumer point of view, companies that are in the mini grid space really, really excite me because, you know, then they allow, as you mentioned, the 600 million without connection to the main electricity grid, that connection to some sort of power, which is actually very, very interesting.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
Yeah, then so maybe just looking at the near future, then what should we look forward to on the energy space, both at a country and an African level, as we see more economies now recover from COVID?
I think it will still be a sort of a painful and rather slow journey. I think sometimes you have wins and then there's particular setbacks. Uh-huh. I think I would encourage us to kind of look holistically at what the benefits, the long-term benefits are for us as an economy. Uh-huh. I think on that, I would encourage that, you know, we're really pragmatic about fixing what we say is industrialization for our country. I mean, considering that our manufacturing sector has not really moved much since we got independence, and those ultimately would be where a significant amount of that energy consumption would go, I think we really need to stop and think, what are we not doing right, and fix some of those issues. Yeah. I think without demand creation, and I think the manufacturing sector as well falls right into that, then, you know, it makes it very difficult. It's sort of a chicken and egg situation where we might be chasing, you know, more investment, but we're still at a place where we do not require it. So, you know, rightly so, looking at even, you know, capacity at the moment in the country, and then where we are on demand, right? The fact that we do have currently at the moment that we do have more capacity, electricity capacity, than we do, you know, the demand for that electricity. And so it's bridging that gap, but also having the foresight to know that we do need to continue planning.
Yeah.
I think it will be exciting. I think, you know, with us being at the crux of supporting our clients around, you know, conversion of a lot of these thermal power plants, I'm very excited to see, even as we're having the conversations about the long-term pipeline, but perhaps some private sector innovation around the importation of LNG to fuel some of these plants. I think, you know, there are other investments that are being made to enhance, even from an importation of fuel standpoint. Like I recently had an opportunity to visit what will be the, you know, KOT2, our terminal jetty, and seeing a lot of those, you know, sort of infrastructure improvements that are slated to be done until the end of the year means that, you know, that will safeguard the fuel stocks within the country. And in addition to that, reduce some of the demurrage costs that perhaps were being passed on to the fuel tariff ultimately. So those are some of the things that I'm quite excited to see. I think on the other side, battery storage, as it's, you know, coming down, so that, you know, whereas right now we worry about renewable energy because it's intermittent, right? It's difficult to store it, and I think the pricing points are not where we need them to be to, you know, encourage it at a larger scale. I think I'm excited to see a lot of that innovation, you know, come on board. And so then there will not be that, you know, conversation around, you know, renewable energy, and that not being a base load. Quite excited for that. And then I think just a push and a drive around sustainable investing. I think that will be quite critical for all of us to ensure that as a continent, and specifically our private sector companies, are prepared for that. And then lastly, I think it's our reliance on our government or the exchequer to finance a lot of our critical energy infrastructure. I think personally, this is partly why we're in, you know, the current debt crisis, because we finance everything through, you know, through government or government borrowing. So it will be exciting to see us moving from there. So things like transmission projects being financed by investors, you know, and then that takes away or relieves the financial burden from governments.
Awesome. I think that, you know, it marks the perfect, you know, way to sort of end this discussion. Obviously, I would want us to have another discussion some other time to just go deeper into renewable energy. But maybe I can wrap it up with sort of like a more personal question. You're also an investor in the tech businesses in Kenya. What are your thoughts, especially on the ecosystem, and, you know, what kind of industries, or what do you look at when you're investing in, you know, in tech businesses in the country?
You're right in that this has been quite personal. I think I do have to recognize that through those investments, perhaps I've been afforded a lens, given that very often I probably went to the same schools as many of the people who are, you know, sort of the tech founders. And then on the other side, I also, you know, worked, for example, within the Wall Street banks and various financial institutions with those that have become venture capitalists or angel investors in a lot of these businesses, right? So I think what it says is that, very similar to Silicon Valley, I think the ecosystem, number one, is still small. I think we need to do more to make that broader. And I think access to information as well, recognizing that money moves where it feels safe, right? Yeah. So especially with our local entrepreneurs, number one, it's ensuring that first, not just from an investment standpoint, we also, you know, cognizant that we should be doing more as sort of as locals, right, as Kenyans, to actually be the ones who are providing that angel investing. I don't think it should be what the current situation is right now, where a lot of that money, you know, is from foreigners, you know, and particularly the West. I think we can certainly do better there. I think doing coaching, a lot more coaching, I think, in terms of what it takes to do capital raising, right? It's these issues that I'm having a conversation with you about right now on ESG and ESG reporting, right? So for a lot of our tech businesses, do you have all your documentation, you know, right at the beginning of the business? You know, have you kind of thought through the long term in terms of where, you know, where you ultimately want to go? And then are preparing the brand and the messaging to serve you and to get to a place where you're able to attract that type of investment. I think we also haven't done as much with the accelerators, you know, so it's one thing to put a group of entrepreneurs together. But so for example, in Sweden, I was extremely impressed by the ecosystem that they had created. It might be a small company, but generally their tech startups are usually global startups. I mean, take Spotify as an example. Yeah. And one thing that they did different with us, and I know that there are a few firms that are trying this out, is that you have the entrepreneur, the tech entrepreneur, you know, sitting side by side with the potential investors. So in many ways, you harmonize the language between the entrepreneur and then ultimately what the investor would be looking for. And so you close that gap sooner rather than later, right? After a lot of capital has already been expended. But on that note, I think I will say that I have been, you know, impressed, especially in Nigeria, you know, with some of, you know, kind of the unicorns that we're seeing out there.
Yeah.
And that even in the West, particularly in Silicon Valley, that they are taking, you know, African-led startups quite seriously. So it's very encouraging, you know, for people who can participate and play on both sides.
Awesome. Thank you very much again for the time. I've really, really enjoyed the discussion.
And thank you so much for having me, and continue doing the great work at Kenyan Wall Street.
Awesome. Thank you very much.